Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? That's right. It is about that time. Happy Tuesday, March 2, 7, 2018. That's right. I am your host, Al Martin, coming to you live here on the campus of Michigan State University inside of Studio West, right here on WKAR AM 870, 105.1 FM. On today's current sports, it will be a busy one. Not one, not two, but three guests will join me throughout this hour. I'm sure many of you have heard by now, but ex-Michigan State Dean and former boss of Larry Nassar, William Strample, is facing neglect of duty, criminal sexual conduct charges. He was arrested at his home yesterday. This is the story that leads here locally in mid-Michigan. And, of course, as you can imagine, this story is also getting a ton of national attention. I mean, it's on ESPN.com's front page as we speak. Yahoo Sports, Sports Illustrated also reporting on this story. William Forsythe, the man who has been investigating the happenings here on the campus of Michigan State University as it pertains to the Larry Nassar sentencing. William Forsythe actually held a press conference a little after noon today. Saw the presser. There are a few takeaways from that press conference. And William Strample will actually be arraigned on the charges a little over than an hour from now, around 2:30 p.m. On today's current sports, she will be joining us around the 1:15 mark. Shayna Roth, reporter for Michigan Public Radio and our WKAR correspondent. Shayna has been following this story since this morning, and she will provide an update for you all in just a moment. Also, later on this hour, around the 1:30 mark, ushering in segment B will be Neil Koepke, one of the longest tenured and most respected college hockey writers in the nation. He currently writes for MSUSpartans.com. I mean, this dude has been covering college hockey for more than 45 seasons now. That includes 25 as the hockey beat writer for the Spartan hockey program in the Lansing State Journal. And prior to joining the LSJ staff, he spent 13 seasons as the University of Michigan beat reporter for the Ann Arbor News and 1 year as an analyst with Ken Cal, now the voice of the Detroit Red Wings on U of M radio broadcast WAAM. So he knows his hockey. He knows his college hockey specifically. And Neil will talk about the Frozen Four, which includes the Michigan Wolverines. How about that? It's got to be good to be a Wolverine fan, right? I know you hate hearing that, Spartan fans, but hey, I'm just keeping it real. So Neil Koepke will join us to usher in segment B, and then on the back end of the show, we will talk about the NCAA tournament, men's basketball tournament, with Deshaun Tate, a dear friend of the show, college basketball reporter, host, and producer for CBS Radio in Atlanta. Deshaun was covering throughout the weekend the Elite Eight rounds, and of course the Sweet 16, which dwindled down to the Elite Eight, which dwindled down now to the Final Four. A few of those games taking place down in Atlanta. We'll get Deshaun's take on the four remaining teams, and we'll also talk with Deshaun about the likelihood of Jaren Jackson Jr. possibly coming back for a second season with the Michigan State men's basketball team. Many people feel like Jaren may just chuck up the deuces, go get his money in the NBA. And I feel like many of you already believe that Miles Bridges is pretty much out the door, right? He's got both feet out the door now. He talked with a lot of finality after that Syracuse loss in the second round of the NCAA tourney. So we'll talk a bit about that with Deshaun Tate as well. If you would like to be a part of the fun, you know there are multiple ways in which you can do so. Pick up that phone and dial 517-355-WKAR. 517-355-9527 is the number to call. Join us via social media. You can watch and listen via the live stream at facebook.com/WKAR News, or even tweet us. Tweet me directly at Al Martin WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR_sports. I'll stop wasting time here. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. All right, and we start with the William Strample news, a Michigan State University official who oversaw a clinic where former sports doctor Larry Nassar worked is facing now criminal charges for allegedly inappropriately touching a student and storing nude photos of female students on his work computer. William Strample, who was dean of the College of Osteopathic Medicine until late last year, he was charged today with a felony, a high court misdemeanor, and two misdemeanors. He is due to be arraigned around 2:30 p.m. The complaint charges Strample with fourth-degree criminal sexual conduct, neglect of duty, and misconduct of a public official. The 70-year-old Strample told police last year he never followed up after ordering Larry Nassar in 2014 to have a third person present when providing treatment to, quote, anything close to a sensitive area, end quote. Again, Shana Roth, reporter for Michigan Public Radio and our correspondent here at WKAR. She will join me in a matter of minutes now to talk about what has taken place since yesterday and what she expects to happen at the arraignment for William Strample, again, which will take place at 2:30 p.m. All right, Sister Jean has become the star of March Madness in the face of Loyola Chicago's improbable run to the men's basketball Final Four. And neither she nor the Ramblers are going away anytime soon, which means ahead of a Final Four matchup on Saturday, the Michigan Wolverines don't just need an answer to a Loyola's crisp offense and energetic, disciplined defense. It needs an answer to its opponent's 98-year-old team chaplain. On Sunday, it got one. I don't know if you guys saw this story. Very cool stuff. But Mary Bell Hicks, the 100-year-old grandmother of former Michigan Wolverines basketball star Jalen Rose, she stepped up. Mary Bell Hicks, decked out in a Michigan hat and Michigan T-shirt, she called out Sister Jean ahead of the Final Four matchup between Loyola and Michigan, saying, quote, Sister Jean, it's been a good ride, but it's over Saturday. That's my grandma accent. I hope you guys enjoyed that. She went on to stare at the camera, and she was very serious as well. For those that have seen this video, I've totally forgot, you know, to cut this bite. Maybe Ian can cook up something, because it's better hearing it than my old grandmother impression. Sister Jean, it's been quite a ride. You got to hear it for yourself, all right? But this was posted on Jalen's Instagram account. And at the end, it, of course, says go blue. So Sister Jean and Mary Bell Hicks going at it, 98 years old and 100 years old. That is such a blessing. I really hope to get anywhere close to that throughout my lifetime. Very cool stuff. All right. The University of Detroit Mercy. Oh, do you have it, Ian? Okay, Ian, can you play that for me? Because it's great stuff. Or do we not have it? Do we not have it? Just wave the white flag if not.
Blue 100. Jean, it's been a good ride, but it's over Saturday. Go Blue!
Oh, that's good stuff. That's good stuff. Love it. That's, again, Mary Bell Hicks, 100-year-old grandmother of former Wolverine men's basketball star Jalen Rose. Good work there. Good work there, Ian. All right. The University of Detroit Mercy has fired head basketball coach Bakari Alexander after a season defined by controversy and uninspired performance. Quote, University of Detroit Mercy basketball director of athletics, Robert Vowles, or I should say just director of athletics, Robert Vowles, announced that head men's basketball coach Bakari Alexander has been relieved of his duties effective immediately. That's what the university stated yesterday in a statement. The statement also said assistant men's basketball coach Jermaine Jackson is his name, I kid you not, like from Jermaine of the Jacksons. He will serve as interim head coach. Quote, Bakari helped inspire a strong work ethic among players and staff during his time and always challenged players to be their best both on and off the courts. We thank him for his efforts and wish him the best. That's what Vowles said in a statement. All right, Reggie Jackson scored 20 points. Reggie Bullock added 16, and the Detroit Pistons defeated the lowly Los Angeles Lakers 112-106 last night. The Pistons held a moment of silence before the game for Grand Rapids Drive guard Zeke Upshaw, who sadly passed away early on Monday after collapsing late in the game on Saturday. Grand Rapids is Detroit's G League affiliate. Just such a sad story there. The Pistons won for the fourth time in five games, but trails idle Miami by five games for the final Eastern Conference playoff spot. With Blake Griffin reduced to 24 minutes due to foul trouble, reserve Anthony Tolliver added 15. As the Pistons put six players in double figures, the Pistons will host the Washington Wizards on Thursday. With Michigan's basketball team headed to the Final Four for the first time since 2013, Trey Burke's name has come up plenty over the last week or so. But it isn't just Burke's connection to the Wolverines. It's his play with the New York Knicks that's making the biggest headlines. In his second start this season on Monday night, Burke dropped a career-high 42 points in an overtime loss to the Charlotte Hornets. He had 35 after halftime and was 19 of 31 shooting overall with 12 assists. He's now averaging 12.2 points, 4 assists on the season with the Knicks. Brendan Gallagher scored twice, including his 30th burden. I tell you, Tuesday, Ian. Burden, where in the heck did that come from? Brendan Gallagher scored twice, including his 30th goal of the season, and Carey Price snapped a seven-game losing streak as the Montreal Canadiens defeated the skidding Detroit Red Wings 4-2 on Monday night. The Wings have won just once in their last 14 games. The Detroit Tigers are playing their final exhibition game of spring training as they face the Tampa Bay Rays. Victory Rays. He led off for the Tigers today, and right-handed pitcher Matthew Boyd got the start at the mound. Detroit currently down 1-0 in the bottom of the second inning. And Ndamukong Suh's second free agency tour ended with a much different deal than the last time around. It's only for 1 year, but what a year it has the chance to be. The Pro Bowl defensive tackle and former number two overall pick of your Detroit Lions is joining the St. Louis Rams on a 1 year, $14 million contract. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Again, call in to be a part of the show, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Let's keep it pushing.
But I want to highlight paragraphs 28 and 29 of the probable cause affidavit, because I think they summarize the basis of the misconduct charge against former Dean Strample. In paragraph 28, as dean of the college, Strample used his office to harass, discriminate, demean, sexually proposition, and sexually assault female students in violation of his statutory duty as a public officer. In paragraph 29, as dean of the college, Strample abused the authority of his public office through threats of manipulation to solicit, receive, possess pornographic images of women who appear to be MSU students in violation of his statutory duty as a public officer. Counts 3 and 4 apply to his supervision, or quite frankly, his lack of supervision of Larry Nassar. Count 3 alleges that he did willfully neglect to develop and maintain Michigan State University College of Osteopathic Medicine, a duty enjoined upon him by statute, by allowing Larry Nassar, a DO, whom the defendant had supervisory duties over, to continue to see patients after receiving a Title IX complaint alleging sexual misconduct by Nassar before the Title IX investigation was completed. Count 4 alleges that he failed to enforce protocols, including but not limited to the use of surgical gloves during examinations, procedures involving patients, acquiring informed consent from patients prior to any examinations or procedures, and attendance by any other employee in the examination room with Nassar and patients during examinations of procedure. Those are the basis of the 4 charges against him.
Yeah, that was the voice of State of Michigan Special Prosecutor Bill Forsyth, or William Forsyth, who gave an update on the Michigan State investigation and the allegations against the former dean, William Strample. I want to get right to it because I know she's so busy right now. The arraignment for Strample will take place around 2:30 p.m., and she's been covering it since this morning. But I want to welcome to Current Sports to kind of give us a timeline of events and an update on things. Shayna Roth, reporter for Michigan Public Radio and our correspondent here at WKAR. Shayna, first off, welcome to Current Sports. Good afternoon.
Hello. Good afternoon. Thank you so much for having me on.
Without a doubt. Always good chatting with you, Shayna. The timeline of events, I want you kind of to establish that right now, because I know yesterday, you know, I started to see images on social media of media camped outside of the house of William Strample. I saw law enforcement vehicles ready to arrest him at his home. How did this start? Did you know this was coming down the pike? And just kind of, if you can kind of give us a summary of what has happened so far.
So this was pretty much a surprise for most people. It was for me. The writing was a little bit on the wall that something was going to happen either yesterday or today, because we got notice of this press conference by the Attorney General's office. It wasn't clear at the time if it was going to be something as big as somebody getting arrested and having felony charges. So as you mentioned, you know, last night there were reports coming out that William Strample was arrested. He was taken to the Ingham County Jail, and then there was a little bit of silence for a bit. Nobody was really saying anything. It was hard to figure out, you know, what was going on. So, you know, myself and a few other reporters checked in at the East Lansing courthouse this morning at 8 a.m. to see if he was going to be arraigned at that time and to get some more information on this case. It turned out he was not going to be arraigned this morning at 8 a.m. As you said, he's going to be arraigned in about an hour and a half. But we were able to get the felony complaint at that time, and that's when we learned about all of the specific charges. And then just now at 12:30, there was a brief press conference with the special prosecutor where he was essentially explaining these charges and what led to those charges.
And Forsyth didn't take any questions, right, Shayna?
No, he did not. Although, you know, persistent reporters, a few people tried and were not really able to get anything out of him.
Right, of course. Now, are you at the courthouse right now?
I am not at the courthouse. I am camped out right outside of where the press conference took place. As soon as I get off the phone with you, I'm headed over there.
Oh, I don't want to waste much more of your time here. I'll only have you on here for a few more minutes. I know you're so busy right
absolutely.
Now, Shayna. But can you go through the charges that William Strample is facing right now?
Absolutely. So he's got one felony, one so-called high court misdemeanor, and then two regular misdemeanors. So we'll start at the top with the felony. This is misconduct of a public official. It is a 5-year, he's facing up to 5 years and or a $10,000 fine. And this one, a lot of the allegations stem don't really involve Nassar. So these are allegations of various former students at MSU, former female students, saying that Strample abused his position to make sexually explicit comments to them, to insinuate that he would like sexual favors from them. One woman reports that he told a group of people, I quote, "I hold your entire future in my hand and I can do whatever I want with it." So that's part of that charge. The other part of that charge is that he allegedly has pornographic photographs and videos on his work computer. And that is sort of another major basis for this misconduct of a public official charge. Now, the second count is for criminal sexual conduct, fourth degree, and that is the high court misdemeanor. It's punishable by up to 2 years and or a $500 fine. And that is for grabbing the buttocks of one of these women without their consent. And then the other two counts, we're looking at two counts of public officer willful neglect of duty, and those are misdemeanors punishable by 1 year and or up to $1,000. And that's kind of where Nassar really comes into play. The charges say that Strample allowed for Nassar, who he was Nassar's boss or had supervisory duties over, to continue to see patients after a Title IX complaint was filed, but before the Title IX investigation was completed. And then they also allege that Strample didn't enforce protocols on Nassar that he was supposed to, and that includes making Nassar wear surgical gloves during examinations, getting an informed consent from patients to perform certain exams and procedures. And so that's kind of where Nassar fits in, is in those last two charges.
So these charges basically alleging that, in a way, Strample kind of enabled Nassar's behavior then, right?
Absolutely. That's a great way of putting it. Yes, those misdemeanors are yes, him enabling Nassar to keep doing what he was doing for so long.
All right, Shayna, what kind of atmosphere do you expect at the arraignment today?
If it was anything like the press conference, jam-packed, there were quite a few reporters, everybody itching for a seat and to try and, you know, make space in there. We will see, I believe it is in front of Judge Ball, who runs a tight courtroom. So we'll see kind of what happens there. I believe Strample will be at the arraignment via a video conference, but okay. I'm not 100% sure on that.
All right. Well, Shayna, keep up the great work. We'll let you get down there. Again, you can follow Shayna Roth on Twitter at Shayna. That's CHEYNA_R. And also, Shayna, how can they follow your other work throughout the day when it comes to this story?
You know, following it on Twitter, I'm trying to live tweet everything as it happens. So following me on Twitter is a great way. And I know that WKAR News tends to retweet my tweets. So if you can't find me, always check it out on your local NPR station and check out WKAR on Twitter.
Without a doubt. And we'll be retweeting throughout the day, of course. And Shayna, I know that you wanted some coffee this morning. We're still working on that here at WKAR's Current Sports. All right. So just be patient with us. All right, Shayna Roth, appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You too. All right. Well, that's a lot to take in. That is a lot to take in. And again, as Shayna noted, this was a story that was really unexpected. You know, I was a bit shocked. As I was sitting back doing some work on my laptop, and then all of a sudden I see on social media that there were media members camped outside of the house, the home of William Strample, and there were many reporters actually live streaming what was taking place. There were police vehicles outside of the house. And, you know, you look at what's being alleged here, and let's be real here. We knew that what happened a few months ago when it came to Nassar's sentencing, we knew that wasn't over because, of course, Bill Schuette announced that William Forsythe would be the special investigator investigating every corner of the university. And William Strample was certainly on that radar because he was the boss of Larry Nassar. But you look at what's being alleged here, and again, you know, as it pertains specifically to Nassar, you know, Strample allowed Nassar to resume seeing patients on Michigan State's campus in late July of 2014 after Nassar was cleared of all charges after that Title IX investigation that Shana noted. Now, he remained under police investigation for the same incident until December of 2015. Several women say they were abused by Nassar during that time. And when he returned to the clinic in 2014, Nassar and Strample agreed to a new set of guidelines to use when he was treating patients in sensitive areas. The guidelines included that Nassar should explain fully what he was doing before touching patients near private areas, and that he should avoid skin-to-skin contact whenever possible, and that a chaperone should be present during any such treatment. Strample went on to tell police that he didn't think it was necessary to follow up and make sure Nassar was following the protocol, and he did not inform other employees at the clinic about the new rules. And also, as Shana just detailed, pornographic images on Strample's work computer. Other women saying that they were alleging that they were harassed sexually by William Strample. Just the latest in a very unfortunate chapter here at Michigan State University. Thoughts, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to call. Again, you can also weigh in below our live stream at facebook.com/WKAR News and even tweet us. Tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR, and at WKAR_sports. The lead story today here on Current Sports is the breaking news concerning Larry Nassar's former boss, William Strample, who was the dean of the College of Osteopathic Medicine until late last year. He has been charged and will be arraigned. He is expected to be arraigned on the charges at 2:30 p.m. And, you know, I feel like, Ian, before we hit this first break, you know, I feel like we knew other things were going to come out as a result of the investigation. Of course, we didn't have a timeline of when things were going to start to come out. But this is a huge revelation in this unfortunate saga here. And, I saw a tweet from Rachel Denhollander, who is the Joan of Arc. She was the first one to come out and say that, hey, I think I was abused here by Larry Nassar. I don't think that these treatments that he gave me were approved. You know, approved treatments out there were legit medical practices. And she inspired an army of survivors to come out and say that they were also abused, giving them the courage to do so. But when something like this happens in an elongated time period of something like more than 20 years, there have to be other parties who saw or heard that something wrong was going on here. And others need to be held accountable. And this is, I think, is certainly a big name that falls right into that conversation, Ian.
Yeah, I agree. Clearly, due diligence was not done here on the part of the dean of osteopathic medicine. The excuse, I didn't think to follow up with him about this medical procedure is kind of lackluster, in my opinion, kind of lacks any depth. So hopefully justice will be done here, and we can keep moving forward with this case. Keep finding out new information if there is any to find out, and keep supporting the victims as they go through this healing process.
517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will invite to the show Neil Koepke. We'll talk some Frozen Four with him. Neil Koepke, one of the longest tenured and most well-respected college hockey writers in the nation, currently writes for, of course, MSUSpartans.com. We'll chat with Neil and so much ahead. Keep it locked right here. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Just wrapped up segment A, discussing the biggest news here in our area. That news concerning former Michigan State University Dean and Larry Nassar boss William Strample, who is facing now four charges, including neglect of duty by a public official. Strample was arrested yesterday and is expected to be arraigned on the charges at 2:30 p.m. today. Again, we also talked with Shana Roth, reporter for Michigan Public Radio, and our WKAR correspondent. She joined us as she's been following this story throughout the afternoon, throughout the morning, I should say. And William Forsyth, the special investigator, actually held a press conference a little after noon, and Shana will be present for the arraignment, which she expects to be to take place via video. She expects Strample to be present via video when it comes to that arraignment. Thoughts, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Many of you weighing in on social media at Facebook.com/WKAR News, and I think one of our listeners brings up a big point and a big point of emphasis here that many of us have been waiting on, and I think this will eventually come to light and we'll eventually hear from her in some way, shape, form, or capacity, hopefully. But Ben says, where the heck is Kathy Klages? And that's a good point, because Kathy Klages, we all know how documented that story is, because allegedly two gymnasts came to her and said, hey, something's going on here. I think I may have been abused. And she basically discouraged those individuals, those gymnasts, those survivors from coming forward. Haven't heard from her in a long, long time. Patience is certainly a virtue, and I expect that to come to light at some point throughout this investigation as well. Again, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Taking a break from the drama, I want to bring on right now Neil Koepke, one of the longest tenured and most well-respected college hockey writers in the nation. He currently writes for MSUSpartans.com. And I want to bring Neil on to talk Frozen Four. There are four teams remaining competing for the championship in the world of college hockey. Those four teams are Minnesota Duluth, Ohio State, Notre Dame, and how about the Michigan Wolverines? Not just competing in the Final Four in the world of men's college hoops, but also college hockey. Neil Koepke, welcome to Current Sports. How you doing, Neil?
I'm doing good, Al.
Always good chatting with you, my friend. So let's dive right into it. The four teams I just mentioned competing and will be competing in the semifinals on April 5th. Do any of those teams surprise you?
Well, I think maybe a couple surprised because of the fact that they didn't have great starts and weren't doing very well, like as recently as maybe late January. And that would be Minnesota Duluth and Michigan. Those two teams, when you started the tournament, were probably considered very good teams because they were on a little bit of a roll coming in. You say Minnesota Duluth, maybe not, Al, because the Bulldogs actually got in at the expense of Minnesota mm-hmm. by 1/10,000th of a percentage point in the RPI ratings that are used to part of the process used to determine the field. So Duluth was like a little bit of an outsider, and obviously a poor seed, and they basically took advantage of some situations in the regionals and got their way there. And Michigan, by last count of late January, was struggling, losing to Ohio State and wondering where they were going. They were like two games above 500, I think, and they went on a little bit of a roll. But at the end, they were considered a very good team. They just got better and better and better. And so they're probably a little bit of a surprise, too, especially when you consider that St. Cloud is a team that probably should have been there, could have been there. But they were stunned by Air Force in the first game of the tournament, actually. Mm-hmm. One of the first games of the tournament last Friday. And so those, you consider St. Cloud was a power, and so was Providence, and also Northeastern. And Denver, again, was counted on probably to be a favorite to repeat. They won last year, and they were looking good in mid to late February, and people thought, oh, Denver can beat Ohio State, can beat everybody. And yet the Buckeyes on Sunday afternoon late upset them, and not only upset them, Al, but beat them 5-1.
Right.
And a little bit of a shocker. But so the Buckeyes are really the team that people are going, whoa, where did that come from? Good team, but boy, they really had to go and pull off an upset to get there. So I would say Ohio State, and Notre Dame, of course. Notre Dame's been like almost number one, number two, number three most a lot of the season. So they weren't a surprise. They went on a 13-game Big Ten winning streak to start the season. So I would say Notre Dame and Ohio State, they were considered in the mix. And then Michigan, a little bit of an outsider, and Duluth, the real surprise to get there based on other teams ahead of them.
And, Neil, when you have three of the final four teams coming from the same conference in the Big Ten, that speaks directly to the strength of the Big Ten, right?
Yeah. Well, the Big Ten, you know, over the last few years has been much maligned because of the fact that several teams, including, you know, Michigan State and Wisconsin, and to a certain extent last year Michigan, were just down. And they were just going through some building stages, and it wasn't a good league. Minnesota was the cream of the crop, winning four straight first place finishes. And Ohio State was like, yeah, they're okay. They weren't great. Penn State was just new and on the rise in the last couple of years. They've been pretty good. And obviously this year got in the tournament as it did last year. But this year it came to fruition with basically the fact that this league is getting better and better. And in the Big Ten this season, almost everybody in the league improved, except you might say Wisconsin, which fell off at the end, and they didn't have as good a season this year as they did last year. But they were still pretty good, and they were still sitting pretty with 3 weeks to go in about third place and could have made home ice for the playoffs. But they basically stumbled at the end a little bit, and as a result, they slipped a little bit into sixth place. But everybody was improved, especially like a team like Michigan, which struggled last year finishing sixth, and this year rebounding under new coach Mel Pearson, and they put it together at the right time. And boy, if you're playing well in mid-February and it continued on, and you could be a force, and that's what Michigan has done. So the Big Ten really is sitting back and celebrating and saying, you know what, we took a lot of licks because of the fact that we didn't have some great teams in the tournament. We only had one almost every year and sometimes none. And now in the Frozen Four, we've got three. And so that says a lot to the way the Big Ten has come on in year five of the conference. And it's going to probably even get better because if you look at it, Al, there's not a lot of weak teams. Now the Spartans were a little weakest, obviously, but they did win 12 games. They did compete hard. And, you know, they, like Notre Dame, Al, the last time Notre Dame lost a game was the last night of the regular season to Michigan State. So the Spartans proved they could beat almost anybody. They didn't beat Minnesota, but they came close. But again, a program on the rise, but with everybody else, with Notre Dame being in the conference for the first time and winning it handily. And then obviously following course and, you know, sustaining their number one seed by going through winning the regular season title and then following that up with the playoff title and then following that up with two regional wins in their regional out east. And so I wouldn't say the Big Ten is necessarily the best conference, but it's really close to the National Collegiate Hockey Conference, the NCHC. And right now, those two conferences are the ones that have teams in the tournament coming up next weekend in St. Paul.
Very impressive stuff. Neil Koepke, longtime college hockey writer, currently writes for MSUSpartans.com. And I eventually want to talk about the preliminary stages of the tenure of Danton Cole here at Michigan State. But before I do want to just ask a follow-up when it comes to the Michigan Wolverines under the new leadership of Mel Pearson. It's been very impressive what he's been able to do. And you mentioned those struggles at the beginning of the year for Michigan. And then gradually getting better and turning things around and now in the Frozen Four. What has Mel been able to do that led to that turnaround, Neil?
Well, I think what he's been able to do is make the structure of Michigan's team a lot better when it comes to defense and handling the puck and not being as loosey-goosey, because Michigan has been known for what you would call like a fire wagon, wide-open type team. That's the way that Michigan had played under Red Berenson. And teams like, you know, Minnesota and Boston College and a little bit of BU, it was basically get the puck, possess it, and go. And in Michigan's case, they basically were struggling with just their own defense, and especially last year and so forth, and goaltending. But this year, I think the structure of the team, the defensive concepts improved as the season went on. And then they started believing in themselves in terms of, like, playing defense and actually having an offense that produced. They had a very good line of Cooper Marody, a junior, with Dexter Danks on the right wing, a senior, and Dexter Danks on the left wing, mm-hmm. and Tony Calderon, a right wing who was very proficient in putting the puck in the net. And that line, along with some balance below it, and also a good defense, and finally, Al, they found a goaltender that they stuck with after about a year and a half. And basically, Hayden Levine, the goaltender, has been proven to be a very solid goaltender, probably the most solid they've had in like 3 or 4 years. And so you had them all together, and suddenly Michigan was a force, and they were able to get on a roll, beat some teams, swept Notre Dame in early February, and basically got their confidence going, and basically lost one game there, I think, since in mid-February. So I give credit to Mel for basically just staying with it. He didn't panic when they were losing, and they were like 2 games over .500 in late January, and, you know, nobody thought they were a threat at that point. But that's the beauty of college hockey. It's the beauty of sports. You see the NCAA basketball, that you can be a sort of an also-ran and not a very good team overall in January, February, but if you get going and you get confidence and things start falling, I mean, just look at the Michigan basketball team, the same type of thing.
Yeah.
With not many people said, oh, yeah, Michigan's pretty good, but I don't think they're a threat down the road. Well, guess what? They kept doing nothing but winning and improving. And even when they weren't shooting well or doing, everything perfect, they were doing enough stuff to be formidable with defense and so forth. And I think that translated over to the Michigan hockey program. Their defense picked up, and their puck movement and puck possession got better, and they won games. And again, February is a key month, and they came alive, you know, as did these other teams too. Ohio State did the same thing, and they continued it most of the season. But Michigan and Mel Pearson have done a great job, and now we're going to see in the Big Ten in the NCAA tournament a rematch of Notre Dame and the Wolverines. For the fifth time, they split the first two series. They split four games, I should say. The first two series, Notre Dame won, swept the first one the first week of January, mm-hmm. both games. And then it was a home-and-home. And then basically in early February, Michigan returned the favor and swept Notre Dame. And that's what started a little bit of a run and, like I say, their confidence level. So for the fifth time, the Wolverines, and the Irish. And this should be a good semifinal at 9:30 next Thursday night. And we obviously see a Big Ten team will be in the final playing for the championship. And that's the and you know, Al, the last time the Big Ten team won the title was Michigan State in 11 years ago in 2007.
So really?
This will be something new if it happens. And obviously, the Buckeyes on the other side of that bracket, the start, will be playing Minnesota Duluth. And you could have an all Big Ten final. And obviously, like we just said before, that certainly says a lot about what the Big Ten Conference has evolved into.
How about that? Next week, April 5th, the semifinals will get underway at Xcel Energy Center in Minnesota. First game at 6 p.m. on ESPN2, Minnesota Duluth taking on Ohio State. And as you just mentioned, Neil, that second game, 9:30 p.m. puck drop at Xcel Energy Center in Minnesota, Michigan and Notre Dame. I'm going to put you on the spot before we get you out of here, Neil. Who wins the entire enchilada and why?
You know what? I've still got to pick Notre Dame. I'm going to say Notre Dame in a squeaker, a 3-2, maybe 4-2, an empty netter over Michigan. I think they're going to continue to play well, great defense. They've got just enough offense to do it. They're not a fire wagon team. It's a contrast in style, with Notre Dame being more defensive and deliberate and Michigan being more get the puck and go and, you know, still play good defense and responsible defense. But they really like to push the puck and move it around and sustain the puck and also get good shots and be a fast-getting team. Notre Dame a little more deliberate. And the other game, I'm going to pick Ohio State to beat Duluth. I think the Buckeyes still have that mojo going. It showed in the – I don't think anybody Al gave a chance to Ohio State to beat Denver because of what Denver done in the past, and they're loaded with talent. And much of that talent has already gone to the NHL 2 days after the tournament and in the regionals. But I would think it's going to be Ohio State to beat Duluth. And then I'm going to stick with Notre Dame, and it's in another close game, probably 3-2, 2-1, something like that, against Ohio State. And a Big Ten will have their first champion in 11 years.
All right, you heard it from the man himself. Take it to Vegas, listeners. Neil Koepke, longtime college hockey writer, currently writes for MSUSpartans.com. Neil, I want to get you back on after the national championship game, and I also want to get you back on to talk about what you think of what Danton Cole is doing to revive the program here in East Lansing. How does that sound? That sound good, Neil?
That'd be great. Talk about what happened in the tournament and a little bit of touching on Michigan State and where they go from here.
You got it.
That'd be great.
You got it. Neil, the one, the only. Thank you, Neil, for your time, man. All right, let's hit our final break. When we come back, we will talk with Deshaun Tate. We'll get his take, on what has happened throughout the NCAA men's basketball tournament. We know who the four teams are that will be competing this weekend for a national championship. Oh, boy. Should be a good two games, I should say. We'll be right back. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Been a busy show today. We've talked with Shayna Roth, reporter for Michigan Public Radio and our WKAR correspondent, about the new developments concerning the arrest of the former dean of the College of Osteopathic Medicine, the former boss of Larry Nassar, that being William Strample, who will be arraigned in about 40 minutes from now. And we just talked with Neil Koepke, longtime college hockey writer, currently writes for MSUSpartans.com. Neil weighing in on the Frozen Four, which does include the Wolverines, the Michigan Wolverines. And you know what other tournament includes the Michigan Wolverines? That's right, the NC2A men's basketball tournament. It's good times out in Ann Arbor right now. The Michigan Wolverines will take on Loyola Chicago, the Cinderella 11 seed, this weekend for a chance to dance in the national championship game, which will take place on Monday out in San Antonio, Texas. Villanova in Kansas the other game that will be taking place in the Final Four this weekend. 2 1-seeds going at it to get his take, Tate's take, on what has happened so far throughout the tournament. It's DeShaun Tate, college basketball reporter, host, and producer for CBS Radio down in Atlanta. He attended the tourney this past weekend out in Atlanta. DeShaun, how you doing, my man?
Al Martin, I heard you talking about good times out in Ann Arbor. That's got to be every Spartan's nightmare. Hey, first of all, let me say this. The guest was good, but my ears was bleeding talking about all the success that Michigan has been having in Michigan against Notre Dame in the Frozen Four, and then we got them in the Final Four. It's like on a year that Michigan State was expected to win the national championship by so many that assumed it, now Michigan goes to the Final Four to play for a chance. I don't know what to do with myself.
I'm telling you, right? And one of our listeners chimes in on Facebook and says, I hope Michigan fails in the Frozen Four and the Final Four. It's not fail for them. Well, I should say, he says it's fail, not hell, for Michigan. So yeah, it's a lot of it's not great times here in EL. And again, it does, you know, turn your stomach a bit when you talk about the success out in Ann Arbor. But hey, respect. Game recognizes game, and Michigan, you can't deny that they have had quite the run in both college hockey and college basketball. But when you look at these four teams, I mean, DeShaun, I had Michigan going in my Final Four in my main bracket. But Loyola Chicago, can you touch on how amazing that story has been to follow?
It has actually been pretty good, you know, obviously. And everything that Sister Jean has meant to this team, the chaplain of the team, and you know everything that they've done, man. I mean, it's really come from being really balanced on defense and on offense, and you know, regardless of the teams that they played, because you know, I say that because they're being compared to, you know, the Butlers and the VCUs and the George Mason. Now George Mason went on, and of course, throughout the duration of that tournament, you know, they had to go through some much tougher teams, being, you know, obviously Michigan State, North Carolina, Wichita State was pretty good then too, as well as Connecticut. And Butler went through Michigan State as well, and VCU had to go through Kansas. But you know, we haven't exactly seen the competition that Loyola had to go through in comparison to the ones that I just previously mentioned. But nevertheless, everybody that's in the Final Four deserves to be there. Loyola certainly deserves to be there. This isn't a team, you know, with 10 or 11, 12 losses, barely got in or was bad during the regular season and happened to win the conference tournament, luckily got in and got hot. They won five games. They lost five games on the season, and one of those against Florida, showing that they're a really good team. Clayton Custer, a really good point guard. Ben Richardson gets a lot of talk, but Clayton Custer, a really, really good guard for them. And I don't think that this is automatically, you know, just right in with your Sharpie, Michigan, to win this game by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, Loyola's playing with house money. Their confidence is as high as anybody else's remaining in the tournament, and they're going to be ready to come out and play. They've got nothing to lose. And you know, these small schools, all they do is sit back and wait on an opportunity to play on a big stage such as this one. So it should be a good game on Saturday night.
On the other side, of course, Villanova and Kansas, 2 1-seeds going at it. But I must say, DeShaun, did that Duke and Kansas game have the feel of a national championship game in your eyes? Because I tell you, when I was sitting back on the couch watching that game, I said, man, this should be the national championship game. It goes to overtime. That was fun to watch, I must say.
It certainly did have a national championship-type feel to it. Just as far as the energy, and that's what March Madness is. You know, it's about the tradition, the elite teams, and just the prestige of these programs. And I love, you know, March Madness, obviously, the first 2 weeks, obviously the first weekend and stuff is a lot of upsets. And typically I like to see a little bit more chalk, maybe not a lot, but a little bit more chalk going into the Sweet 16 and into the Elite Eight. And going into what we were just talking about Loyola real quick before I jump back over, you know, we've seen in a 7-seed or higher go to the Final Four in the last, 4 years. I think this makes the 5th year. So this year, obviously, they're in 11. They go, and then, you know, last year was South Carolina as a 7-seed, and, you know, obviously in 16 was Syracuse, and 15 was Michigan State as a 7, and I think Kentucky in 2014 was an 8-seed. But back on track, I just want to make sure I threw that out there because we're seeing that. That's what this parody is really coming from. People want to know how they got there. But as far as Duke, one thing that concerned me was just, you know, this is what happens. Everybody like Coach K wants to be so much like Calipari in terms of recruiting the one and done, but not really having to go through the exact same struggles. And now you kind of see that, and Coach K is kind of facing that in a sense with Grayson Allen being the only senior that's in the starting lineup. And my concerns was if one of those bigs between Wendell Carter and Marvin Bagley in the foul trouble, where do they turn to, especially if Grayson Allen's not having a productive game? So I just think that Kansas went ahead and ended up taking care of business because they were the last team with the ball. But that shot by Grayson Allen that didn't go down, that one sure had you holding your breath. That game certainly had you on the edge of your seat.
Yeah, and Grayson didn't shoot well throughout that game, and he tried to come through in the clutch, but hey, too little too late. But, you know, Villanova and Kansas, that's going to be such a good game. Villanova playing so well. They're finding different ways to win. I'm just going to get right to it because we have less than 2 minutes left here, Deshaun. Who wins this entire thing and why?
I think I'm going to take Kansas. You know, Kansas is one of those elite teams. You know, they won in 88 with Danny and the Miracles, and then, you know, obviously 20 years later they win one in the exact same place in San Antonio. Here we are 10 years later. I mean, they're on the clock. As much as I like to say, you know, that this was Duke's national championship to lose, the same thing with Michigan State. I mean, they needed another one coming up soon. Kansas right along the lines in that same token. You know, they've dropped a couple balls as well. So I'm going to go with Kansas on this one just because of the fact that when you start mixing in the experience and they're not maybe not the deepest team, but they have dogs on this team. And I know Devontae Graham and some of these other guys get a lot of credit. However, same token, the Gerald Fick is really, really good as well. And they have the coach in Bill Self that can cut down the nets. But I like to think that whoever the winner is of that game will certainly win the national championship.
My man Deshaun Tate, college basketball reporter, host and producer for CBS Radio down in Atlanta, Georgia. Deshaun, thank you for your time as always, my friend.
Absolutely. Thanks, Mark. Hey, Al, I'll be down there, man, in San Antonio for the Final Four, man. So feel free to bring me back on, man. I'm going to give you some exclusive stuff.
Oh, that's guaranteed. We got to have you back on. You will be back on, Deshaun. I appreciate
Looking
it,
forward
man.
To it.
Have fun down there in Texas, all right?
All right. Thanks. Appreciate you, Al.
All right, Deshaun Tate, he's great. And much thanks to all of our listeners out there. I see many of you chiming in on social media. Ben, Chris, Ron, Tatiana, Steven, thank you so much. All of our guests today, Deshaun Tate, Neil Koepke, Shayna Roth, will be back at it same time, same place tomorrow on Hump Day. Be easy, people.